are listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever, mostly. I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
That's a tough act. That was a tough song to follow. My name is John Sieber, obviously Nick Lachey. And we are coming at you with a little Sex and the City podcast.
Wow.
The Bradshaw Boys.
Wow.
Wow. Wow, the Bradshaw Boys are doing a podcast.
Wow.
Wow.
That's wow. Like,
that was like in Owen Wilson, but it was also going into something else.
Guys, like if, Owen Wilson had a really bad head cold.
Boys. Wow. This is, we got to nip this in the bud right now. We can't start off with a fucking tangent. We just got slapped on the wrist.
Okay, if you've never listened to our podcast, first of all, welcome. Second of all, we'd love for you to go and leave us a review on iTunes because that helps us, and we will read them on the air like we're about to read this one.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kevin.
This is from Kale MCP, a friend, a colleague,
a gentleman.
Someone we've never met.
Mm-hmm.
Too many tangents. The episodes are over an hour long, and sometimes they spend over half that time talking about anything but the show. Two cosmos. Your podcast is the season five of Sex and the City.
They didn't say that though. You're saying that's what they're saying.
You guys should change your name to the Burger Boys because you suck that hard.
They said, "Listen, you're basically the guy from Models and Mortals. Your podcast is the guy from Models and Mortals.
Is it Models and Mayhem? No, Models and Mortals.
Models and Mortals.
Yeah.
Yeah." You guys
episode
are
the photographer.
Yeah.
Episode two.
I mean,
you guys are the good muffins dude in the Hamptons that walks out and wags his ding dong at Carrie.
Pepper grinder dick.
Pepper grinder guy.
Here's the thing. I don't disagree with him. I think sometimes we can go too tangential. And that's why we're instating a new policy. What's his name? Kale.
I don't know if it's
Kale's
definitely not listening now because
too many tangents.
Kale's done. We've barely even talked about Sex and the City so far. So Kale is out.
Yeah. And we're going to go on the two-star tangent. If we go down too far, two-star tangent is the ultimate tangent breaker and we have to get right back on track.
But here's the thing. If it's not a two-star tangent, if it's a worthy tangent,
we're taking that exit off
the highway.
Let it go.
If it's a five-star tangent, we're putting the blinker on, getting off the highway.
We'll call that Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, it's a Cracker Barrel tangent.
You're getting off the highway. You're having yourself a nice breakfast at a reasonable price, and you're playing a fun game with some golf tees at the table.
You might end up being an ignoramus, but that's fine. That's what ends up happening when you take a five-star tangent.
And listen, I know some of you are saying, stop. Don't steal third. Some of you are waving us to home. Say, keep it going.
Yeah.
We can't service all of you. We can't.
Here's
some of you love the tangents and some of you are Kale. And there's nothing wrong with that.
If you love the tangents, hop on Apple and write us a five-star tangent review. Say, I'm not here for Sex and City. I'm just here for the tangents.
We had a long, convoluted conversation about how Howard Schultz would ejaculate in your coffee. And we said, if you hear that, get on iTunes and give us a five Cosmo rating. And someone just put five Cosmos for Howard Schultz.
Listen, they liked that tangent.
And we can't
go into it.
We do our best to try and make sure that our tangents revolve around our four ladies. the Mount Rushmore of television, Charlotte, Samantha, mm-hmm. Carrie, and
Miranda.
And we
were you about to tangent away from Miranda?
I was gonna say and Capote Duncan, but I was like, I should have, you know. But you know, I feel like we've gotten better throughout the pod.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question, and here's the rub, if I can Shakespeare you. Here's the rub to all of it. Is the first 5 minutes of this podcast a 2-star tangent? We've been going for 5 minutes. We've hit Cracker Barrel. We've hit Howard Schultz ejaculating in your coffee, which is a callback to earlier in the podcast.
Right now we're in Tangentception.
You know what?
It's like a tangent inside a tangent.
As long as we can avoid the different types of candy that Kevin likes to eat, I think we're on a 5-star tangent. We're doing well.
I wonder if they got on the Rips episode and that's where they got it from.
Everyone needs to know this. We had a legitimate, after our first few episodes, we sat down and we're like, we got to figure out how to weigh our friendship and us just hanging out and actually be down for the business. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the podcast, you find John was basically specifically took the leadership role of making sure that we were here for our listeners. He takes notes and he says, we got some fucking characters to unpack. We have some storylines from back. Mm-hmm. And so we Sex in the City is the salad. It's the tangents are just are some little pine nuts on top just to give it a little crunch.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, I eat a lot of salads, and those bacon bits and pine nuts really make the salad special.
Kale wants to just eat a bunch of leaves.
I'll tell you, Kale. He just wants a salad of nothing but just kale stems and garbage. You know what? We have bacon bits, blue cheese crumbles, tomatoes. We're making a good salad over here.
This is my impression of Kale ordering a salad from Chop. Can I just have that romaine lettuce? That's my impression of Kale.
And then Howard Schultz walks up behind him with a friggin' cup of Starbucks coffee with God knows what in it and just dumps it all over that romaine lettuce.
This is my impression of Kale ordering a salad at Sweetgreen's. Hey, how's it going? Can I get the Southwest Caesar minus jalapenos, minus Fritos, minus chicken, minus green peppers, minus dressing? So just the greens? Yeah, that's correct.
This is my impression of Kale at Ben and Jerry's. Hey, what's your name? I'm sorry, what kind of ice cream? What's your name? Bart. Hey, Bart. Can I just get that bag of lettuce that's back there? I don't want a Vermonster. I don't want to come. Hand me that bag of lettuce that's sitting in the employee break room. Give me that bag of lettuce.
Oh, man.
What are you doing in a minute? Give me the bag of lettuce.
Give me the bag of lettuce.
I think we painted a real accurate picture of this Kale gentleman or lady.
A podcast where three guys.
All right. Talk salads.
That was a 5-star tangent right there.
All right, that's
5 cosmo tangent. All right,
we're on season 6. We're on episode 5. We're on lights, camera, relationships. Some stuff just happened in the last episode we just watched.
This isn't a tangent. I'm staying exactly with what you're saying. What we did just right now was we reached across the table. Our feelings got slightly hurt by Kale, and we reached across the table and we took our spoon and we dug into that chocolate cake.
Mm.
That's what we just did. We just burgered Kale when all Kale was doing was giving some honest criticism.
And you know what? Sometimes our tangents are scrunchies. Sometimes we can have scrunchies, but we don't want to hear about it. And if you tell us, we're going to just give you the burger shoulder the rest of the night.
Are we three burgers right now?
Absolutely. Oh,
some fucking burgers?
Are we a freaking triple stack?
Oh my gosh.
A triple stack burger?
Is this podcast just a hurricane? What's it called?
Hurricane. I have it written down. Hold on. People that are listening are like, you morons.
Hurricane Pandora?
Yeah, Hurricane Pandora.
Is our podcast Hurricane Pandora? And we're just three fragile boys?
Oof. Absolutely.
Do you think in the world of Sex and the City outside of the show that Berger later went on to found the music app Pandora based off his failed book and became a huge success?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He became a tech bro. He's like,
he was 100% tech bro.
He's like he was a writer that was just like, art's super important to me until I can make money. And then I'd just be like, yeah, fuck that.
He founded Pandora. He got a boatload of money and then went into the sound machine business and just lost it all. The rise and fall of Berger's billions.
Wait, is this, I don't want to force it, but is there like a metaphor, like Hurricane Pandora? And then his sound machine was very tropical.
His sound machine that he preferred was campy, I thought. And then she
it was campy. It was just John Waters movies.
She wanted it to be like ocean sounds, I think, right?
Didn't he have frogs? Were there frogs on his?
Yeah, because hers was like campy sound.
But aren't
his was the inside
tropical?
Of a rain. His was the inside of a rainforest cafe. It was literally what you hear when you walk in a rainforest cafe. It was frogs and then someone being like, can I get a tantalizing tiki drink as well? Yeah.
Can I get the blue hurricane, please?
Can I get the blue hurricane? And we'll take some frog poppers too.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, so Berger's acting like a complete, he's got his rainforest cafe sound machine going on. He's acting like a real pill. His book, he thinks the critics don't like it. And then we have Samantha and Jerry Jarrett. They're actually starting to realize who each other are. We have what happened with Miranda? Miranda last episode. Pick a little, talk a little.
Miranda and Steve. We didn't have a lot. Oh no! He's just not that into you. She found that out from Berger.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she talked to the guy, and the guy was like, it's not that I'm just not into you. What's into me is diarrhea.
Right. He just had some diarrhea. But the big story arc, in my opinion, is the Harry and Charlotte situation. Charlotte goes full on. She converts. She makes a delicious Shabbos dinner.
Yeah, Shabbos dinner.
And Harry is more into the Mets. And she brings up how ridiculous it is that a pretty girl like him and just a bald, you know how we feel about bald men. Just a baldy like him are together and the cream cheese poppy exits the building.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, cream cheese poppy.
And that's where we're left. So what do you think lights, camera, relationship's going to be all about?
It's going to be with film. Do you think Carrie ends up being in a... Do you think there's someone who would be in film? Who would be... And
I guess like Smith is like, maybe Smith is an actor. Maybe he gets like a big movie gig or something like that.
Yeah, that could be cool.
That's true.
Like, he deserves it.
I think Smith's going to get a big movie film thing. I think Charlotte and Harry are going to end up back together in this episode.
Yeah. I think maybe he'll come back. Yeah.
I don't feel like there's going to be a lot of, I don't think they're going to stretch that out. Because I don't think it would stretch out like that. Because I think realistically, he left, and I bet it's already hitting him. Like, oh man, I don't want to lose this special person.
It's hitting her, because I think she's the one who played below the belt. So hopefully she goes back to him. I mean, they both need to come to terms with the seriousness of what Charlotte did by changing religions. But she also can't be thinking like that she's better than him or something like that.
All I'm saying is I don't think their relationship is going to take a full Shabbat. It's not going to take a full day of rest.
No.
Oh, yeah. It's not going down to the Sheol at all.
What's
Sheol? That's the grave.
The hell?
The grave. It's a grave.
Oh, man.
Well, here's the thing. It's not really hell. It's the grave. There's not really a hell in Judaism. It's like I go down to Sheol. That's it.
That's it.
It's just the darkness.
Learn something new every day. All right. Let's check out lights, camera, action.
Bye.
Let's get a relationship.
Any final tangent before we leave?
Any two-star tangent? Nah, man. Let's five-star it off the highway and watch this episode.
All right. We will be back.
Bye.
Bye.
Episode 79. Lights, camera, relationship. Carrie receives a big royalty check for her book sales, which upsets Berger, whose book deal has been dropped. A lovesick Miranda helps Steve bake cupcakes for his new girlfriend. Charlotte is reluctant to date after Harry leaves her. Samantha takes charge of the PR for Smith's struggling play, where he gives a striking nude performance. And now, back to the boys.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
And we're back.
What's going on?
Nothing.
Before we start, while we were watching that episode, actually another iTunes review came in. I know that we talked about the first one from Kale, but we actually received one. I'd love to read it from you guys, to you guys. It's really interesting.
It
just says this. Yeah, it says, the rain came down. Hard and soft. It hit the grass, green and wet. Wet, so wet, it reminded me of you. You always smelled like the rain. That's, yeah, thank you. Thanks for that review.
Yeah, but how many stars did they give us?
Yeah, how many stars did they give us?
Three stars, man.
Three stars.
It was from Harvest Moon, the play.
Oh my gosh, dude.
I want to just start talking about Harvest Moon because
there's
so much to talk about. If you've lived in New York for 3 weeks, you've gone and seen a super shitty show that one of your friends is in.
So I would almost say you're more likely to go if you've only lived in New York for 3 weeks, then as opposed if you've been here for years, because I have this theory that applies doubly in this situation.
Oh my gosh.
The first theory is that if you live in New York, maybe this applies to other big cities, but if you live in New York, I think the craziest stuff in your New York timeline happens in your first year.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, that's just what living in New York is like. And then 5, 10 years later, you're like, that never happened again, but that happened on day two of being here.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is a hard and fast rule. I remember going, like, I remember seeing a guy barefoot, no shirt on, dragging a trash bag, walked up to the edge of the subway, lit a cigarette, and then just started peeing on the tracks. And it was like 3 in the afternoon. And I've seen things like that, but all of those things at once right then, I was like, this must be in New York. And I'm like, that not all those things have happened
well,
at once.
I've been here for a long time.
So the second thing is, The second thing is, if you're here for 3 weeks, you're going to meet people that are like, hey man, I'm doing this play. It's called Harvest Moon. And your thought is also going to be, this is what New York is. And you are dumb enough to just go to see a play that like two people are at. And then you're going to walk out and be like, I think that was amazing. And then 5 years later, you'll be like, that was not amazing at all.
What's the second
theory? Those are my two theories. The first theory is crazy things always happen in your first year in the city. Second thing is you're more likely to end up at a play like Harvest Moon in your first 3 weeks than if you've lived here for 10 years. Because you just go to stuff. I would love to go to improv jazz night where there's no instruments and everyone just uses their mouths.
Except
I'd love to go to scat jazz
night. I disagree with the end part of your second theory because...
Ooh, counterpoint.
Because...
Tell me why.
Well, because it's too tiring to go to all the weird shit. Like, it's too tiring, like, at this point, at being like, I've been here for 12 years to just go to everything. So I don't think my experience with that is that sometimes the chaos of the first few years I was here, I went to cooler stuff than sometimes I go to now because you get in a rhythm and there was more like, I just ended up this random thing that was incredible. And now... as people change over and sometimes you're not, you know, like some people leave and you don't have a friend who's in PR who invites you to cool stuff and you can get into a rut. So I feel like my first few months here, I ended up at some wild, interesting stuff. You know what I mean?
But did you also end up at some Harvest Moons more than you would end up at a Harvest Moon now?
I think I go to more Harvest Moons now than I ever.
Oh, you got to switch up your game, my friend.
Here's the second.
You're talking to like number one people pleaser here. And I'm like, I've been able to duck a few Harvest Moons.
Here's the second interesting thing about Harvest Moon. That was St. Anne's Warehouse, wasn't it?
It was in that area.
It was in that area.
I think it was part of St. Anne's Warehouse, which for those of you who are not familiar with New York, St. Anne's Warehouse is a theater right on the water in Dumbo. And St. Anne's Warehouse is legit.
Great.
The stuff that they put around, is amazing.
Was it around then? Was St. Anne's Warehouse around in the early 2000s?
We could look up when they moved to Brooklyn because it's a British company. But... that could have been one of their early, let me see.
Right? Harvest Moon.
Oh, that makes sense. It's a British company because there was that British red carpet photographer going, Carrie, hey, Carrie, yeah, exactly. Just you, not the guy.
Remember
that dude?
Hey, Carrie, get on the lift. Have a pint.
I loved that one guy who just happened to be like a British tabloid photographer. So we also need to delve into whether Harvest Moon was good or bad.
Wow.
I
mean,
I think we're talking about it like it was terrible. It might not have been terrible.
St. Anne's Warehouse, 1980 in Brooklyn.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it was St. Anne's.
It probably was.
Okay, let's talk about this episode. The through line of the episode is obviously acting, lights, camera, action. And Carrie posed the question, are men of today less threatened or are by women's success or are they just acting? And so everything had an acting theme, but the secondary theme was being threatened by powerful, successful women. Of course, Carrie receives an advance from how well her books are doing in Paris. She gets a $25,000 check and Berger is extremely threatened by the success that she is having. Jerry Jarrett wants to act, and Samantha decides to take his role in Harvest Moon on as a PR campaign, and
she crushes it,
gets half of Manhattan there, and Jerry is not threatened. He is of the younger breed, as Samantha says. Miranda's acting like she is not involved with Steve or not doesn't love Steve, and eventually ends up in a pickle where she's making cupcakes for Debbie, Steve's girlfriend. And then Charlotte, I'm not really sure how Charlotte's storyline played in. I guess she was acting like she was comfortable as a single woman and trying to like try
that. She don't need no man's.
Like she don't need no man. So she was acting like what life would be like as a single woman, although she ends up going on a date with an extremely attractive foreign Prada salesman. So
I think I disagree that he was attractive. I feel like he was like what on paper seems attractive, and then you type in all of the things like tan and jawline, and then they come out and you're just like, it looks like a fake person.
And I see, like, I mean,
and I know that's a real person, so now I feel kind of bad, but he was like a, you know, like when it's like a filler person, it looks like he was the stand-in, lights, camera, action. He was the stand-in for Bobby Cannavale. And that's how they ended up getting him.
I feel like he's like when you go to an audition and you read the character description, he is like the guy that's just the character description.
Yeah.
I also feel like he,
maybe you guys,
I don't know,
stop
if he was
acting like assholes about this poor, nice Spanish gentleman.
What? He went home. He didn't go on a date with her. By the way, she said, do you want to come home with me? Charlotte was down to get fucked. She said,
also, you know, that actor later, went to jail for double homicide. Which is a crazy trivia fact about that episode.
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding. He didn't.
Where'd that come from?
What?
Because you were like, you're making fun of this guy. I was like, yeah, he's a double murderer. He murdered an old married couple.
It's a two-star tangent.
That is a two-star tangent. We'll get off that.
No, I love it.
You just got convicted. Judgment. Rule.
Dude, you just got kale-victed.
You are...
I do feel like it's funny that we're like, listen, we invite anyone to leave a review, but if you leave a 2-star review and put your name on there, don't think we are not going to put that kale on the grill and light you up for the whole episode.
We will basically process it the same way Berger processed seeing a $25,000 check from a publisher he no longer works with. We will act like big fucking man babies.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. Listen, I think this is actually a perfect episode to not have a woman on the pod to like push back. We can handle this discussion on our own and say, I really do. That's like, all right, let's give our honest feelings about dating women that are more powerful or attraction and masculinity. I feel like this is one of those times that it's like her thing is a question for society, and it's kind of up to us right now. Like, we could open it up another time, but to say where do you think most men are like that, Berger, and also ourselves?
All right. So she asked the question, are men of today less threatened by powerful, successful women, or are they just acting? And I have two answers to that question. I have my answer, and I have men as a whole of today. If I can speak on behalf of every single man, I think men of today are terrified of successful, powerful women. And I think you just need to look at politics to see that. I think having someone like Elizabeth Warren not become the nominee for the Democrats is proof that we are settling for a less ideal man because the DNC as a whole was afraid of a powerful, strong woman running against someone like Trump.
I think I will say, and I don't want to get too deep into politics, but I think in that theory, you're completely X-ing out the fact that Gary Johnson could have come back into the race. And that's a flawed theory.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. No, but
Scary Gary could have taken.
I also
all the way.
Don't want to get too into politics, but I still think that the overall men are still at the top of the totem pole and will lash out at anyone who is below them to keep their spot. And I think it's unfortunate and I hate it, but I think that's where we're at.
Well, I think what you're describing, and I'm getting this from a book I read that we have talked about on the podcast, from that Bell Hooks book. Mm-hmm. I think the fear and the power dynamic you're describing is what people ascribe to the thing called patriarchy, mm-hmm. where it's a power structure of being on top, whether it's a male, an actual male figure or not. the domineering power figure and the fear of losing that mm-hmm. is a patriarchal structure where power is the thing that you strive for. And when it's removed from you, you sort of fight to stay in control. And if you have to be subservient to anyone else, you're afraid to be subservient to someone else because it means that you lose mm-hmm. and you lose your power.
I think on a personal level, and when you take it into relationships, I feel like the hallmark of any strong, powerful, good relationship is respect and understanding and helping other people, meeting like the give and take. And I feel like, it'd be interesting to look at a study of like there's more women in the workforce. So of course it's going to be more difficult for someone 80 years ago. There's going to be different views of women in the workforce in relationships now because there's more women in there now. So in theory, it's like 100% like Smith Jarrett's going to be more okay with that than like another person. We're probably more used to certain things that our parents would be like, oh wow, that's not better or worse. It's just different.
Different.
But then with that, because there is a power dynamic in society changing, but within that, like this does not at all excuse, it's like when you break it down to a relationship, you have to take at a certain point, like we're not all like you're by yourself with the relationship is one and two. Like, yeah, I'm affected by your and Katie's decisions, you know, but I'm not in your relationship. You know, that's mm-hmm. between you two. And there's parts of that that I'll never be a part of. Then have nothing.
Corey was in the middle of our relationship a few weekends ago when we did a Skype. A Zoom date and with Corey and mm-hmm. Terrell, the pizza delivery guy, would refuse to bring the pizza to our front door, and he saw.
Oh, I
he peeked inside yeah. our relationship a little bit.
I Ooh. Saw a little bit of cyber domestic. It wasn't a squabble. I just think it was like domestic drama in the cyber home. Well, and I was on the other end of the Zoom.
That's as far in as that's a metaphor. We can only get as far in as Terrell got to your relationship.
Well, yeah. Terrell, as far in as Terrell would come into the building, which was outside the building, leaving the pizza outside the building, on the ground.
Leaving the pizza on the public ground, which is particularly frustrating for me because I get it. I like if you're a delivery person right now, it's not a great time.
It's not. It's not a you're deal. You're more at risk.
Having
this
said
was like
that.
A month into COVID too.
Having well, we said also, that.
Having said that, we also recognize that and like throw out, we order once a week and throw out like pretty large tips being like, thank you for what you're doing. I expect you to bring the pizza up to my door inside the building and leave it outside in the hallway,
right?
Not just on the cement ground in the rain like Terrell did, but I digress.
You were a repeat order. You're a weekly repeat order from this place, yeah. Which is a great place. So yeah, you had some history there.
Anyway, I totally two-star tangent away from what you're saying.
That's fine.
Anyway, what were you saying, Kevin?
I think there's a point that it's like, I'll quickly get to my point that it's like, Berger is probably the most realistic boyfriend that has been represented on the show so far. It makes sense why he's so hated. Because I think that right now, Berger is an asshole. He's making asshole moves. There's also, there could be, like, there's more, that right now they're just the hallmark of a relationship that is just not gonna work. And I think looks exactly like any relationship that doesn't work. That people are forcing it and they really like it, but like, they're not respecting the other person. He's not happy for her. She is trying to meet him and he's like all wounded and like, and sad. And I think that, I don't know that, I don't know. I just always find it weird when you take on like a big societal thing and then the cures for it are really personal. I think that's what it is. Like, it is true that it's like men and women based on, like, at least when there's the patriarchy, there were like answers. There was answers, because that's just a system that people fit into. And when you know there's a system, you know what the rules are. And I feel like we're in a time right now where there isn't a system, and so everyone has different rules, and it's causing a lot of, we're in this like shifting place where a lot of people don't know what relationships should look like, and there's not as many institutions, the good ones or the bad ones, but at least in an institution you know the rules. And I think that was an interesting episode to bring some of that up. And I don't know if they necessarily, I mean, it's a show, so they couldn't totally dive into it, but I feel like it was foreshadowing to be like, oh, if you think this is relevant, then like, it's just going to be more of whatever they tackled in that episode for the next 50 years, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and go ahead. Sorry.
And then my whole point is like, you and Katie, like every couple that I know has a different way of how that looks. And all of it is based on personally worked out respect and understanding of work versus family versus expectations. And especially in New York, I don't think I know that many people that are just like, yeah, this is how it is. Where it used to be like, this is how it is. John, you work, Katie have babies. And then there's not much, we do this, and there's not much to say beyond that. I see it work and not work in tons of different types of relationships.
Yeah.
In my relationship, I think I will make more money. Just kidding. There's no way that'll happen.
You going to be okay with that?
You what?
Are you going to be okay with that?
Yeah, I would totally be okay with it, but I don't begrudge. I don't begrudge a man that struggles to deal with that, as long as they're trying to.
I would say that I struggle with it. I mean, like, two things. I think things from when this episode aired, which was 15-ish years ago, like, I think things in society have, I don't know if you want to say, I progressed, I guess, but like, definitely like these issues have been spoken about more. Mm-hmm. I would say, I think we're still a lot in the same structure as when we were then. I just think we've talked about it a lot more, but I think we're still pretty much, I think we're pretty much in the same structure. I think that things have changed culturally, but I think you look at corporations, you look at things like, yes, there are more female CEOs. But I, and this is the thing, I don't want to like get off on like a whole long thing of the definition of patriarchy, because I don't feel like we have that much time. But I will say, like, in that book, that a lot of the discussion was like, patriarchy is not male head or female head. It's a power structure thing. So it's basically like, there's just more women in the structure that's been set up for the longest time.
Yeah.
Corporations still work like they've always worked.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I work at a large corporation and it's great. And I've worked at several large corporations. They all kind of run the same way in terms of a corporate power structure. Mm-hmm. And that's all sort of based on like what we've had. I think you're right, Kevin, that like in a personal relationship thing, that's where you get vulnerable between, like John and Katie, like you get in a relationship, you get in people, like you just have to work out your things between how you feel with each other. And that is, I think, what is just vulnerability.
Yeah.
And like, I do think all three of us, since we're having this discussion amongst three dudes, I think all three of us are like ambitious, creative people.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, there are things that we want to do. And I feel personally that like, I am attracted to ambitious, creative people as well. But like, if I were to, you know, date or marry someone who is like, you know, we're in the same field, we're in parallel fields, yeah, I think it would be a struggle to be like, oh shoot, I'm really trying to, you know, like excel at being at like working in media, comedy, television, whatever, and this person is effortlessly doing it. Now, that being said,
well, that's a different conversation too. Like that's like a Mozart Salieri situation where if they're totally just effortlessly doing it, like I think if both people are working the same amount and someone has, you know, like Katie makes more money than me and I'm totally fine with it. I'm like, that's great. That's more money for our family.
I think the thing that I'm trying to get at too is, cause I think that's good. You can say that. I don't like the fact that, like, I guess I'm trying to be open to be like, yeah, it's sometimes it's a thing where I'm like, oh, I have to be 100% honest that I'm like, I have some insecurity there, what I want in a relationship is to be, and I think I've been there before and am there, but I have to like come back to be honest that sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, and this where I think it goes to Berger is that it strikes at your own self-worth or you're like, well, shoot, why can't I like sell this book? Why can't I sell this TV show? And so I think what I want is to be in a relationship where like, if that person's super successful, that they can be just as excited for you and be like, hey, look, especially in the arts, trying to be successful is a vulnerable thing because it's like there's no rhyme or reason. Yeah. And so like if I am with a person that makes a ton more money than me, I want to be able to be super happy with that and feel like I have been in the past, but like it's a struggle sometimes because I think insecurity in work is a struggle. And I would venture to say it's a struggle for more men than they are comfortable admitting.
Which is probably why Kevin said that this is like the most realistic boyfriend. But
totally.
I do want to move on to other parts of the episode. Kevin, what were you going to give me your last thing?
I was just going to say that I think that it's not really possible that when feelings come up, you can't. Like, it's pretty classic that it's like, you can't help your feelings. You know what I mean? It's what you do with them.
Totally.
And I think that it's interesting that Berger is literally having very, very natural feelings that I think are very representative of what it would be like to be in a creative relationship that someone's like doing better, especially dude, if both of their books were doing fine, they'd be fucking crushing it. And then it's the circumstances that it's like, well, you can't plan for like when feelings come, you can't be like, just be like press them down. And that's why it's like kind of a train wreck watching him be like, oh dude, you can't leave. You can't leave.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
It's like you can't help how you're feeling, but go Agreed. With her and go sit through the play and like, Agreed. And just like own it and just like be present. Don't bail and make her be alone. And that's where he fumbled hard.
Yeah. And I want to be clear that like all the stuff I was saying before, that's like feeling stuff. I think you're right.
Yeah,
what you do with it, with the action. Like, I think even if you are feeling those things, you don't just like bail at the front door. Like you go in, even if you're hating it, and then you talk about it afterwards. Also, I will say it just because we might not get back to Berger, no matter how you're feeling, maybe just like read the room on the motorcycle choice right there.
Yeah,
maybe
totally.
Just park it and get a cab.
Yeah. Kevin, you're the motorcycle guy. This is speaking directly to you.
Listen, the next time you show up and a girl has a dress that looks like it's a bag for a dress, or the girl has a bag that looks like it's a hanging bag, but it's really a purse.
Park the bike, park the Honda, and take a cab.
Don't make her put on a freaking...
Dude.
Don't make her put on a freaking helmet. Just read the room.
Let's get out. We have so much to talk about. We have so much to talk about. Let's go into Samantha's storyline, which I think was the weakest. Had Mario Cantone. We had some Anthony. We had some Stanford Blatch.
I said Samantha.
I meant Charlotte. I'm sorry. Classic error. I felt one thing. I did the other. I'm sorry. Charlotte's storyline, which I thought was the weakest, still supported by great cameos. Her scene with Mario Cantone in the park where he was just like, nope, gay, nope, gay, but he doesn't know it. Weak arms, pale. There's a Jew you can date.
Anthony just, you know, he's the horniest man on the show. You think it's Samantha?
Dude,
he's so horned up. He is all of us in spring.
He's all of us like that first week of spring. He's completely that first week of spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was great. I didn't really like, that storyline didn't really do much for me. Like, you know, her just kind of like, it was essentially allowing her to do like one scene of self-reflection of be like, do I want to be a single lady? What would this feel like? And then, here is a Prada salesman to keep me busy. So
yeah. And then I guess the most interesting about it was like, you're going to keep being Jewish. Like, I guess that shows a commitment to the way Charlotte doesn't make decisions just based on other people, even though it, like, that is kind of interesting because it's like setting the groundwork that it's like, I did do this for myself. I'm not just doing it for this person, even though it's like, it's insane. But yeah, this was an episode where she just had to fetch a little bit with Anthony.
Yeah, just hang out.
That's
I just love that we get a fun Anthony scene out of nowhere.
Fetch. Let's talk about Miranda and Steve.
Yeah,
I think that scene where she is cupcaking. Oh man,
give her a trophy.
That was great Cynthia Nixon acting right there.
Yeah, great acting.
She fucked up Debbie's B though.
Good.
Well, you know what?
Fuck Debbie.
Debbie doesn't get her tears. Didn't get those tears.
Like she has in that, and happy birthday, Debbie. You have three B's to choose from. So it's like if you mess up one of the B's, it can say like happy birthday or firthday, Debbie, or happy birthday.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
They're
Debbie.
Pretty like, important I think she'll bees, be fine. Though. They're pretty important B's. You know what I mean? Like you can't mess up birthday. And you can mess up one of the Debbies, but it's like
you can just
these are important bees.
Did they do a little Debbie playoff in that scene? Did they do a little Debbie pun? I feel like they might have done one with the cake mix. I'm not sure. They missed an opportunity, if so.
Yeah.
With the cake mix. Little Debbie?
Little Debbie.
Oh, okay, yeah. Dude, that acting, you're right. I think the acting,
who knows?
Right before, when she's just like all eyes, the tears don't even fall. But I'm like, that is so realistic of a person who's about to fucking break down. And she's keeping it together.
And just the idea that she is committed to doing something like helping him make cupcakes for his girlfriend, where she so easily could have been like, no, I can leave. But you're in the middle of it because you've already committed when you find out what it is. And you just like socially can't back out. Like, that's such a relatable feeling.
Just the thing of like, cool. All right. So how many are we doing?
Oh, great. Yeah. And just like
everything she does sends a message.
And Carrie's like, Carrie's like, put the whipped cream down. She does. I don't know. I love that scene.
What if there was like a post credits thing and it's just Miranda sitting there like totally, totally not affected at all. She's like, I was just looking for a good excuse to not see that fucking play. Jeez. I just needed an out. So I turned on the water, the tears, just because it's like, come on, what's it, 3 hours?
Dude, when Samantha first realizes she gets out her calendar and realizes she has plans for Friday, she drops a pretty strong swear combo. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was just your classic shit, motherfucker, fuck shit. But still, like, I appreciate a good Samantha swear combo.
You know what?
But I like that. It's almost like that had happened before. I like that Miranda was like, "Whoa, we got a shit, motherfucker, fuck shit. What's going on?"
Yeah, exactly.
Here?
When do you guys?
It's like a bat signal.
When do you guys drop those? Like, when is the time that you drop those? Because mine is when I'm technology, if like my Bluetooth isn't connecting or like the AirPlay isn't working or something, and I'm just like, motherfucking shit ass cock. Oh, never mind. Okay, it's working. And then I'm just back
to normal. That's a great thing. You gotta, You got to get a picture of that and put it on Instagram and be like, when do you drop your swear combos?
When do you drop yours?
Yeah.
My biggest swear combo is when I stub my toe. If I stub my toe, I will just drop like such a long exaggerated swear combo.
Mine are technology when I'm stressed. Like if I'm trying to like, if I'm like late for like a work Zoom call or something, then my internet goes out. It all just compounds and I'm just like, what the fuck? Come on. But then also it comes out.
That wasn't a swear combo, Corey. That was just,
that was a what the, come on.
That was the cleanest.
Sorry. I don't know what, wait, I don't know swear words. What the, trash can, Sally. What the?
Oh, jelly butter.
No, when I see, I hate roaches and it has been really hot in our building and we've had like more bugs come in and we had to have an exterminator come. But I saw a roach the other night and out of nowhere, because I freaking hate those.
Was it like one of the big ones?
There's a big one on the ground. And I was just like, you motherfucker, what are you doing? Where did you get in here? You little piece of
shit. That's interesting because that is like, when you're doing a swear combo, that's like literally just to the universe. And when you personify the roach, or like when I can't do a password, I'm not like, shit, fucking motherfucker. If a password I can't figure out, I'm like, oh, fuck off. So it's like me talking directly to the website.
Yes, like, I know.
Oh, fuck you.
That's what my name is. I'm like doing that to the roach.
Yeah.
Best swear combo ever caught in action in the wild. Of course, for those of you who don't know, Bill O'Reilly.
Oh.
Fucking thing.
Sucks.
I also liked it though. I had a friend in high school who he was like, my dad doesn't know how to cuss. And he'll be like, I mean, come on, man. That guy's a shit ass. You know, he's a shit ass. And he's like, what do you mean?
My dad's most non-swear. He always said, dag nabbit.
Oh, my parents threw out dag nabbits all the time.
If your dad throws out a dag nabbit, you know something's really wrong.
Dude, my dad, dag nabbit, when my dad says that, he's saying that out loud, and inside he's thinking, shit, motherfucker, whatever Samantha was saying.
Let's talk about Samantha's storyline, which I think that was my favorite.
Oh,
absolute favorite.
So good. Realistic. In a way of like, maybe not like them, like all of Manhattan going to this play, but it's like, I feel like we're so experienced with events like those, or cool PR events, or weird PR events, or just like a weird thing like that is so New York.
Mm-hmm.
So New York.
But I love just seeing her, like, she's gone from like not wanting to get close to this guy, and now she's like, he's young, I can help him. And just like how effortless it was for her to organize this and just like completely hook this guy up was really fun to watch her just get all of Manhattan, pack the show out, and then Stanford just being like, and then a stud was born, just like seeing her make this guy and knowing what assets of his are going to sell. Like,
well, it was
also one of my favorite jokes of the episode is Charlotte going, all of Manhattan's here, and Stanford just goes, who's watching the island?
Oh my gosh, I missed that line.
So funny. Who's watching the island?
Man, they really could not have. I wonder if even then, if the prediction of like Brooklyn, like just the migration and explosion of Brooklyn is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm.
Like I don't do Burrow.
Yeah. I forget what I was going to say. I forget. It was about Smith Jared being a star. I don't know.
Maybe you'll get there. The thing I thought was very cool to see is I love when we get to see Samantha do something and you realize like, you know, Carrie's like famous and everyone knows who she is. And like, you know, Miranda is like a badass lawyer, but when you see Samantha, like, let me do this. And then it's like, oh, she's like freaking amazing at her job.
Yeah.
She just like can pull a couple strings, get everybody there, be like, come see this unknown actor and just like set it up.
And to know that a star is those two things. Like Billie Eilish's music is good and original and interesting, but also it is truly someone's job to pitch stories and pitch narratives and allow you to process a person's persona and story in a way that makes sense. And those, I think it's easy. I think it's Bill Gates. Bill Gates said, like, if you had one more thing, I don't know, one more dollar you could spend, what would it be? And he said it'd be on PR. And it is, it is, because it's like his chops and his looks are just as, and I also thought it was interesting that you think he's going to be dumb guy, but it's like, no, he's a good committed actor. Like he's serious about this. I thought that was an interesting facet of his character.
Yeah.
But that he has all that stuff, and it takes someone like Samantha to be like, you don't need to wallow in this bullshit the rest of your life. Let me show you what my skill is that is not tangible, that is completely hard to put your finger on, but I know how exactly what you need to bring you to the next level, and I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And that's
Bill Gates' quote, which I think is a great quote, is if I was down to my last dollar, I would spend it on public relations. Great quote.
Yeah, and he's never going to get down to that last dollar. So
not a chance.
But what do you guys think the plot of Harvest Moon was about?
That's a great question.
What is it, Harvest?
We should do a bonus episode where we just talk about what we think Harvest Moon is. Harvest Moon's
full
all about.
Moon. It's full moon, isn't it? Isn't it full moon?
Oh, was it full moon?
Full Harvest? It wasn't Harvest Moon. Hold on. Neil Young song.
That's a Neil Young thing. Yeah. We're gonna look this up. Hang on. I'll find it.
The play that I'll find it.
Okay. What do we think the plot of it was though? I mean, it's got a very American Gothic vibe when you had, also I thought that actress at first, like at for a split second, I was like, is that Cherry Jones?
It is. It was Cherry Jones.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it was Cherry Jones.
Cause I looked it up and it says Constance Baron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought for sure it was Cherry Jones as well.
I thought it was too, but it's not. It was a woman named Constance Baron. We didn't even say this. Amy Sedaris.
Oh, yeah.
Great to see Amy Sedaris.
Amy Sedaris back in, dipping in. Oh, my gosh. She looks so much like Cherry Jones.
She looks so much like Cherry Jones. But yeah,
she kind of looks like Diane Constance Weiss Baron as well.
She also was in You Don't Mess with the Zohan. excuse me. But yeah, I mean, some strong American Gothic vibes. I feel like it's got to be like, was Smith Jared that man but younger? Was he the old farmer but younger? And they're sitting on the other sides of like, are they looking back on their life as this old farming couple that first met in that field and had their like young love experience? And now they're married to other different farmers and they're seeing themselves later in life. And then they remember what happened when they first met,
just
under the full moon.
Just why on earth would he be naked right now? Why would he be naked?
See, I think it was like this old farmer provided his farm wife with a house, with wheat, with a field and children, but he could no longer provide her sexually. And that's where they brought in a young stud, Smith Jared, who was basically just as her pony boy. And it was his job to harvest her.
I think also
plow her.
This was, I think it's really interesting that we saw the writing on this the whole time. We said they created a character. They needed to figure any way without taking him upstate how to get the essence of Farmer Luke back in the show. And they figured a way to shoehorn it in.
So good. That's amazing.
Well, I don't know. Did we, before we move on, did we cover Berger and Sarah Jessica Parker enough or did we philosophize too much?
That's a good question.
I think we philosophized a lot and we talked about our views rather than how Berger and Carrie are doing. The good news is I think we'll be able to focus that in and really dive deep on their relationship. when it the closer it's getting to Trainwreck.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's on its you're right, it's on its course right now, and I think either when it ends or next episode we'll be able to talk a little bit more about them specifically.
I agree.
I think I just wonder how they're going to come back from this one. I wonder what the conversation coming back from this one is. It's a big thing.
Hopefully he talks about bell hooks and the patriarchy and taking it down. But let's do our
you know who's a really good writer, Carrie? You know who's a great writer? My ex-girlfriend, bell hooks.
Let's see who he's flipping off.
Let's do our Cosmo rating.
All right. Oof. I think I'm ready.
I'm ready. All right. 3, 2, 1. 3.75.
What? What'd you say,
Kevin? What'd you say?
I said 3.75.
Favorite thing about this is we always do this where we say it at the same time and then we spend a good 30 seconds asking what each other said.
But it's also good because then we don't have the social pressure.
That's true.
You know,
I did three. I gave it a 3.
Whoa.
This episode, I found myself kind of removed from a lot of this episode. I wasn't like super into it. There was a lot of really great scenes. I think the Samantha Smith stuff was awesome. I think Mario Cantone and Charlotte were awesome. I think I was not super invested in the first half of the Miranda Steve relationship, like when he fell asleep on the couch. And then Burger and Carrie, I wasn't super into. I mean, like going Prada, buying him the shirt, all that stuff, I wasn't super into.
For me,
it was like mainly a fun Samantha episode, and then seeing Miranda kick ass and like the B side of her act was really fun. Other than that, like it was pretty forgetful in my opinion. Although there were some really good quotes, messing up Debbie's B. Samantha saying I don't go to Burrows was really great. Mm-hmm. The swear combo, just all that stuff. So there were like some good scenes. It just like wasn't my favorite episode.
I gave it 3.75. You know, you listen. I wouldn't have missed Harry if you hadn't put him in there. Maybe, but it's like. You take him out and then you don't give Charlotte anything to do. Kind of feels like a wasted opportunity that just seems like a clear placeholder. And I feel like they could have just amped her storyline up and maybe made it more interesting. Maybe she did something like super self-destructive or something. Instead, it was kind of mopey. The Samantha and Smith-Jared storyline, that's his origin story. Now we know his name. And one of the stronger storylines as far as real New York, as far as Samantha and Smith Jared in general, loved it. Burger thing, we're watching the train wreck, and then Miranda and Steve, it's kind of good, but more of the same. Great acting, but more of the same. So I really did like it, but kind of like, I don't know, kind of besides the Samantha one, kind of filler-y, I guess. And that is how I feel.
4.25. I feel like I overshot it a little bit. I think it probably could be more like a 4. I think there is one thing though, we're this far along in the series that like there's a lot of gloss in a good way. Like they've got the money. You see a lot of parts of New York, seeing like the inside of like the shopping experience in Prada, which I have never had. So I don't know if that's real or not, but I'm sure it is. But like seeing that, seeing Brooklyn, seeing they were on the Upper West Side, like you see a lot of the city. And like, I do feel like Carrie's outfit in Prada, like I feel like there were good fashion moments in this. It was like, oh, that dress she had on in Prada. Didn't really like the burger shirt, but, and the Cynthia Nixon acting stuff was good. And I do feel like we are seeing some of like the ugly burger stuff, which I think is a big thing of this arc, which I thought was super interesting. And it like sparked interesting discussion for us.
Yeah.
So 4.25, but probably could have gone a little lower, probably could have gone with a 4.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're all in a strong move. And I like that the four of them are like getting along right now.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
I think it's cool. And we had like a lot of good Carrie. She had a one-on-one with Miranda. She had a one-on-one with Samantha. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if she had a one-on-one with Charlotte, but
it was, hey, we got Sedaris, we got Willie Garson. Yeah, this was a good episode.
I probably underrated it, but
got a lot of people in it.
Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for this journey. Hopefully we didn't go on too many two-star tangents. If you like what we do, please give us a five-star review, leave us a comment, follow us on Instagram, on socials, and say hey. We love hearing from you all. We really love when you leave us comments, write us reviews so we can talk about them and go on our own little fun tangential journeys. But we're so appreciative of all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you and all the things, and we appreciate all of you. And we just got one thing left to say.
Later, taters. The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cavan, John Sieber, and Kevin James Doyle. The show is produced by Jeremy L. Balin. For more information on the guys, check out their website at bradshawboys.com, on social media at The Bradshaw Boys, and if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.